Well, here in Matthew 23, we've got this controversy all the way through between the Lord Jesus and the Pharisees. And he talks in very strong terms against them, doesn't he? And you wonder why there is so much emphasis in the Gospels on the danger of Pharisaism. Because the Pharisees were a tiny community. There were, at the most, only a few thousand of them in the whole of Israel and the whole of the world. So they were a very, very small community. And yet Jesus seems to, or let's say the Gospels, seem to give an almost disproportionate amount of emphasis on the controversy between Jesus and them. And I think this is because, although we may all consider that, no, I'm just not a Pharisee, I don't have that sort of mentality that they clearly had, you know, it is in all of us. In most churches, in most ecclesias, in most fellowships, in most groups of believers, there is a right wing and a left wing. And the left wing tend to say that the right wing, or the conservative ones, are like Pharisees, and that's typically a comment that's heard. But the danger is that the essence of Pharisaism is in all of us, just as much in those of us who might consider ourselves, let's say, liberal-minded, eclectic, non-judgmental, etc. You know, there's a tendency this way in all of us. And I think that's why Jesus gives such emphasis to this, or let's say the gospel records give such emphasis to the danger of Pharisaism. Now, don't forget, when we're reading, let's say, the gospel according to Matthew, we are reading a transcript of how Matthew generally preached the gospel. And the same with Mark and Luke and John. And this was the story, as it were, that they generally told. And as time went on after the ascension of Jesus, under inspiration, these records were written down in the form that we now have them. And so it would seem that Matthew particularly felt that the need to warn against Pharisaism was what we could call a first principle. It was actually something that he put up front in his account of the Gospels, of the Gospel. And I wonder why that is. Well, the Pharisees, as Jesus points out and throughout this chapter, were really into external behavior. How you thought within you didn't matter. It was how you were on the surface that was so significant. You see that in verse 25. You hypocrites, you scribes and Pharisees, you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but within you're basically full of evil. And you've got to cleanse first, verse 26, the inside of the cup and of the plate. AV makes a bit of a mess there, I'm reading from the RV. Cleanse first the inside of the cup and of the platter, that the outside may become clean also. And so, 27, 28, you're like these sepulchres that are painted over white so that people don't go near them and get unclean. You outwardly appear righteous, but within you are full of hypocrisy. So then, this idea of the external is what matters and it doesn't matter what's inside me, that actually is not just the danger of, if you like, right-wing conservative religionists. That is for all of us. And there is, I think, particularly in the society at the moment, a great sense that it doesn't really matter what you think inside you. But what's important is how you speak. Nice speak has become almost a religion of its own, a cult of its own. You know, if a country wants to declare war on another country, well, you must make sure that you write to them in nice speak, and then you go ahead and do it. all that is important is the surface. And there's also become a sort of a strong judgmental attitude, I would say, particularly against emotional people. That because somebody says something in anger or in sadness, with emotion, you know, somebody maybe uses a word which maybe, okay, they shouldn't really ideally use, but it comes out in their passion and in the depth of their feeling, and like, you said that. You know, everybody really gets all worked up about that, and the whole essence of the situation is forgotten. It's all taken up in the concern about the language. I remember many years ago now, when I was a student at the University of London, I went to this big Christian Union thing, and there was some guy talking about the urgent needs of, I believe it was Africa or somewhere or other, where people were dying, Horn of Africa maybe it was back then, so, something like that, but it's some urgent need. And he came out with all these statistics, all these slides it was in those days, lights out and slides on the screen and slide projectors. And then he said, and he sort of said, we're going to have a collection, the majority of you are not going to put very much in, and the bottom line is, all these people are dying every moment, da-da-da-da-da, and you, the majority of you here, don't give a, and yes, he used a, I suppose, a mild expletive, you don't give a X. And he said, and I said that on purpose, I mean, I'm paraphrasing him, but he said, I said that on purpose because I know that after this talk, I will get a load of letters and comments. This is before the days of email. I will get a load of letters and comments from people saying how disgusting a Christian speaker used an expletive. And he said, I bet that's going to happen. You might not even have me back here to speak. But he said, it's true, isn't it? You'll write the letters, somebody will write the letter and say, you used an expletive, but what are you doing about those kids and people dying out there? And okay, that's maybe an extreme way to do it, but you know, his point in a sense is kind of valid, that we're so caught up with the external, with the nice speak, that the essence of issues is not addressed. And that is Pharisaism. That is Pharisaism. That's what Matthew 23 is all about. And, you know, Jesus is focused all the time on the internal. And because of that, he keeps warning about hypocrisy. You could say that this was almost a kind of, well, obsession with him. It was a very big thing in his teaching. And of course, if you are so concerned about your image, what you look like, looking in the mirror, as it were, worried what you're looking like, then that is going to lead you to hypocrisy. Because if external image is so important, what would people think if? What would she think? What would he think? What would they think if I wrote like this or if I did that? It could appear this, it could appear that. As soon as you start thinking like that, and this is a very, very common way of thinking, which, let's be honest, we have all been in and are in at times, in some situations at some times, this ends up with hypocrisy, that there is a difference between what I really think inside and what I'm showing outside. And this will lead to a conflict between who we really are, or you could call the real self, and the image that we project, the shadow self. And what I think was so lovable and so attractive and what commended itself to people about Jesus was that there clearly was not those two selves. That what you saw was what you got, that the inside and the outside were the same. And I think that this helps explain why some of the Psalms you read, the Psalms of David, are him praying to God, and yet the language he uses is very, very rough. It is calling down for condemnation upon his enemies, upon, for example, the house of Saul. And yet he, in his better moments, as he did with the death of Saul, I mean, he really was not that kind of guy. He loved these people. You know, he says about Saul that I wept for him as a man weeps for his own mother, full of... I guess he chose that particular image because a man, I think, weeps particularly for his mother more than for his father, or more than a mother weeps for a son in that sense, because he realizes, I didn't appreciate you as I should have done. So there's this very tender love of David for Saul, and yet he prays to God about Saul sometimes, like, well, in my opinion, he is using expletives in some of those things he says, when he figures all these kind of awful curses he wants to come down upon the head of these people who persecuted him, and he talks in such bitter terms and calls them names. I know he doesn't use expletives, but expletives, I think, are a relatively recent thing in human language, and even in a lot of languages that don't have expletives. Latvian, for example, does not have expletives. If you want to swear in Latvian, you better use a Russian word. You would call somebody something. Maybe, you know, in Arabic and Semitic languages, still very strong. You know, if you call somebody, you know, you three-legged donkey, I mean, that's the equivalent of a whole load of F-words and all the rest of it in modern English. And so when David is calling his enemies all these names and wishing all these curses upon them, I mean, this, I suspect, in dynamic terms, transferring language in dynamic terms from how it was back then to how it would be today, he is using expletives, but he's using them in prayer to God. And you think, David, wait a minute, you're praying to God, man. Don't say that to God. Don't talk like that about your enemies to God. Even if I'm wrong in my thing about expletives, which is a theory of language, as it were, the point is, he does talk in very, very bitter terms to God about his enemies, when in his better moments he is very forgiving and gracious to his enemies. And of course what he says, his bitterness against his enemies, is really at variance with the Spirit of Christ, which was the Spirit of God, as reflected here in the New Testament. So why was David like that? Well, I think he was like that because he realized that if that's how I feel, God sees that anyway. So when I'm reading those Psalms, I think, David, you shouldn't have said that to God in a prayer. Well, you know, why not? Because if that's how he felt, well, God saw that anyway. So I think David was reflecting to God exactly how he felt in his prayer. He was telling God how it is, how it was for him at that moment. And the prophets do the same. Jeremiah is the same. Job, in a sense, that in places, I think, does the same. they don't have one set of thoughts inside them, but express themselves to God in nice speak. If that's how you are inside, God sees the inside. And so that's how you are. And so, well, if you're praying to God, well, that's how you feel, that's how you are. You see what I'm saying? That there's no use using nice speak to God. It's just hypocrisy, what God sees anyway. And so I think it is with the Pharisees, and so it is with us so often. Now, I'm not saying that we should not exercise self-control, but there is a difference between self-control and hypocrisy. Self-control starts from within. You know, if you want to stop yourself saying something, let's say you're in a situation where there's a conversation going on and you are really minded to say something very painful and cruel and nasty and angry, you know that those thoughts, that those words are reflecting your thoughts. And the way to control yourself is not to physically kind of bridle your jaws so you don't open your mouth and say something. It is to control your thoughts. And that is the key. And so your words will then reflect how you really feel inside. So let's look at 28, Matthew 23, 28. He says, inwardly, you are full of hypocrisy. How can you be full of hypocrisy inside yourself? Now, just circle that word, within or inwardly, you are full of hypocrisy. I think it's not as simple as saying you are one person on the outside in your public life, in your image that you present, and you're another person inside. He's saying that within you, you are two people. It was a kind of a split personality. They were acting out a role inside of themselves. So their real self and their, whatever you want to call it, projected self, shadow self, were in conflict deep within their own minds. And this is why in 1 Timothy 4 verse 2, Paul speaks about hypocrisy as really being a lie which is told within the human mind. And he parallels it with a conscience which no longer functions properly. So then, This is where conscience starts to break down. When within us, we are two people. How many times do you catch yourself having a fantasy conversation, talking to yourself, as if you are in such and such a situation? And then when you come to a similar situation, you say something quite different in reality. But there is that nagging, gnawing conflict within you. You may not be aware of it, but there is. And it is that conflict within, this battle between the real self and the shadow self, which gets to such a point that it destroys people. It leads people to lose their faith, act against their conscience, to have anger with themselves, which they then project onto other people, all kinds of problems. And hypocrisy spreads. It spreads within us, and it also spreads between persons. In Luke 12, verse 1, Jesus says that his people should beware of the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, which is like yeast, which is like leaven, yeast. And the characteristic of yeast is that it spreads. Let's just read that. Luke 12, verse 1. Beware of the leaven or the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. And incidentally, there in Luke 12, let's read the whole verse. When the many thousands of the multitude were gathered together, insomuch that they trod one upon another, so these people, thousands of them, many thousands, clamoring to get to Jesus, to hear him speak, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, that is most importantly, you beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So he's focused on the disciples, and everyone's wanting to talk about something else, and he says, look, the most important thing is keep away from the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, because it's yeast. It spreads. When you mix with people who are hypocritical, you become hypocritical. You tend to. And you've got this in so many words in Galatians 2 verse 13, where Paul says that Barnabas was carried away by the hypocrisy of the others into hypocrisy. The AV uses a strange word, dissimulation, but it means hypocrisy. Barnabas was carried away by hypocrisy into hypocrisy. Say it again. Barnabas was carried away by hypocrisy into hypocrisy, to the point that one minute he would break bread with the Gentile brethren, then the Jewish brethren came, and he pretended, no, I wouldn't touch a Gentile Christian, I wouldn't break bread with them. No, don't worry, sir, no, brother, no, of course, I'm on your side. How was he led away into that? By the hypocrisy of others. And we don't sort of maybe perceive this consciously, but unconsciously, subconsciously, we do. That the fact that everyone around us is acting out has a huge influence upon us. And so you can see why the emphasis of Jesus is so radical on the internal. On the internal. That's why, you know, James 5, and talking about, I think commenting on the Sermon on the Mount, verse 12, he says, our yes should mean yes, and our no should be no, or else we will fall into hypocrisy. So, if we are playing around with words, we will fall into hypocrisy. It's James 5, verse 12. So, I think he's saying that we can avoid or try to guard against falling into the hypocritical life and mindset by ensuring that our words, our feelings, our intentions are directly and simply stated, and that we have put meaning into words, that our yes means yes, and our no means no. And it's not only for our own benefit. This is for the benefit of others. Because hypocrisy spreads. Whereas if we are real, if we are unashamed to say what we really think and stand up for it, you will suffer for it. You'll be rejected by your brethren, by the world, by people. Sure, that's par for the course. That's what living in Christ is sadly, in a sense, all about. But you go to your grave at peace and in peace. Because in the end, when we stand before the day of judgment, we will be revealed. And we're told that when the side of Jesus was pierced, Simeon said that this would happen so that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. And the day of judgment is also the revealing of the secret things of darkness within the human mind. So that's why, insofar as we come before the cross of Jesus now, particularly at the breaking of bread, reflecting upon him there, if we do it properly, and if we allow him there to sink into us, the thoughts of our hearts are revealed. They are laid bare, just as they will be in the day of judgment. And that is why the breaking of bread, in that sense, is a foretaste of judgment day. And let's just be clear about that. That in that day, we will be ultimately in touch with ourselves. But the point is, we can be that now. And we are particularly helped to be like that now by coming in front of the cross of Jesus. And particularly, I think, in the breaking of bread. This is why the old question, well, what should I examine myself about? Should I be checking that I'm just thinking about Jesus on the cross, or should I be kind of making a list of my sins? Well, the two things go together, because actually, if you are focused upon him there, which is what we should be, then self-examination and self-knowledge flow out of that in a completely natural way. And so, in Christ, particularly in his death, the arm of God was made bare. Although God does speak through similitudes and in idioms and metaphor, that is just a language. God himself reveals himself for who he essentially is. And although the the apparatus, as it were, of that manifestation may change, I mean, the law of Moses was as it was, but it was abrogated in the death of Christ, that doesn't mean that, in fact, God essentially has changed.